Parsha Vayikra, which opens up Sefer Vayikra, deals with, at least the beginning of the Sefer, the laws of the Korbanos, the laws of the different sacrifices. I'd like to focus in on one halacha within the whole rubric of sacrifices, and that is in source number one. Chumash tells us, any meal offering that you offer to Hashem shall not be prepared leaven, for you shall not cause to go up in smoke from any leavening or fruit honey as a fire offering to Hashem. You shall offer them as a first fruit offering to Hashem, but they may not go up upon the altar for a satisfying aroma. And then it goes on to explain, you shall salt your every meal offering with salt. You may not discontinue the salt of your God's covenant from upon your meal offering. On your every offering shall you offer salt. So both the Seor, Dvash combination, as well as the salt combination, are very fascinating to understand. We're going to focus in on what's less common, right? There's a lot of Torah on both, but there's a lot of ink written about the salt. I'd like to focus in on why was it prohibited to have the Seor, the leavening agent, as well as the honey on the sacrifices. And as the Ar Scroll Stone Chumash quoting Chazal note, leaven and fruit may be used for two offerings, both of which may be described as first fruit offerings. They are the Bikurim, which are the first produce of the seven species, and the Steya Lechem, the two leavened loaves of wheat flour that were offered on Shavuos. However, as we know, these were not actually offered on the Mizbeach. They were waved and given over to the Kohanim. On the Mizbeach itself, you could never bring anything that had Seor, anything that was unleavened bread, only matzah, as well as honey, or really any fruit honey. So the question we have to ask is, what is significance, what's going on here? So Rav Reis, in source number 3, notes the following. He quotes the Rambam, who says, V'amishpatim heim ha-mitzvot she-tamam galui v'tovad asliyatam ba'olam hazeh yidua. And our rabbis say there are certain things that we understand, there are certain things that are beyond us to understand, and these are chukim chukotai ve'ein lecha reshut leharher b'hem. And these are God's laws, his dictates, and we cannot even begin to fathom them. And explains the Rambam Maimonides, v'kol ha-korbanot kulam michlal ha-chukim heim. All the aspects of Kavarnos. Why is this from the Tzon and this one from the Bakar? Why is this way? All of these laws, right? When we look at the entire Parsha Vayikra, this is a chult, this is a law that is beyond our understanding to understand. Having said this, within this whole rubric of being unable to understand, notes of Sefer Chinuch by the Seor and the Dvash, Sharasho Mitzvah Zu Ne'elamim Ma'od Limso Afilu Remez Katomehem. So why the other? Why is it so? Why Bakar? Why this age? We can find some hint. When it comes to the why are we not allowed to have Seor and Dvash, notes the Sefer Chinuch, who is the one who explains the mitzvot, at least gives the tab some understanding that it makes it a little bit easier for us to do. He says, this is really beyond our comprehension. Even a remez katomiem, I can't even find you a small hint. And that's an important understanding to begin with, that whatever we say about the Seor and Dvash, and we have a lot to say, we have to understand, first and foremost, we don't understand them. That has to be the mindset we walk into. And perhaps we would add that this falls under the larger rubric in Source 6, Rabbeinu Bachai is citing the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim that when idolaters would bring meal offerings to their God, they would deliberately add leavening agents and sweeteners to distinguish the holy service of the Beis Hamikdash from the sacrificial rites of the pagans. The Torah prohibited preparing a mincha with the ingredients used by the idolaters. According to the Rambam, explains Rabbeinu Bachaya, adding Seor and Dvash to Menachos would be akin to offering korbanos on a single stone matzeva, which was fine in the time of Avos, but now was prohibited. So, perhaps we'll say, we don't understand why the Saor and the Dvash, Saor again is the leavening agent, Dvash it's the honey, is forbidden, but we'll say that it falls under, this is what the idolaters did, and we want to make a distinction between them and us, therefore we can't do it. Which again is an approach. It's very interesting that, which really gets to the heart of what the Sefer Chinuch is speaking about, that the Ashraga brings down the Gemara, which says, Tana Bar Kafra, source number 7, Ilu hayano ten ba kartov shel dvash, ein adam yachol lamod b'pnei recha. If one were to add honey to the mixture of the ketor, the incense, you couldn't stand from such a powerful smell. It would have been just otherworldly, heavenly. V'lama ein marvim dvash, so then why don't we add honey, right? That's part of the lo taptir min ishei l'ashem. Why can't we add it? Mipnei shatara amra ki kol sor v'chol dvash lo taptir min ishei l'ashem. Why not? Because the Torah said, why not? So hold on a second. What is Bar Kafra coming to teach us? We know the Torah says we can't. Why did he say, well, I would have thought, but we can't? And the answer is very simple. What we're learning from here is that even though we may think that it would be better to bring the dvash because it would make the ketoret better, comes along Bar Kafra and says that no, this is the answer. Mifnei shatara amra, because the Torah says, ze atzmo squiggly line 7, hatshuva v'rabbi yoter, the clearest answer. Ki gami nivne livnei adam shadvash mashpich et reach haketoret. Even if we would think, wow, wouldn't this make such a difference? But if the Torah says don't do it, we have to put aside all our cheshbonos, all our thoughts. Umimela hadavash dvar rahula, velo dvar tov. And in reality, the dvash, the honey, doesn't make it better. It's something worse for it. Ki omnam ein anachdu mivini mahu atov amiti. Because we don't really know what is good. We think, it smells much better. But only Hashem knows what's good, and we only know one thing, and this is what we have to keep in mind. Ki ma shekatuv b'Torah hu hatov amiti, whatever is written in the Torah, that is the best good. And this is a binyanav, this is a fundamental principle for all the Torah. A person shouldn't say, let me add it this way, let me add it that way, and that way I'll make Torah better, right? No, elo tzarich lasot b'diyuk ema shatara amra, we have to do what the Torah tells us. Merosh Terim, picking up on this idea, Rav Reis notes that if the whole idea of a korban is that it should be, and this is a refrain over and over again in the parsha, reach yichoach al Hashem, it should be a pleasing smell, it should be acceptable to Hashem, v'knia ha'adam lifnei kono goremet l'nachat ruach me. Ein kamoto. You want to know what the most pleasing sacrifice, the most pleasing smell, what could be the most pleasing to Hashem? It's not adding something that in our mind is, wow, what a great smell. No. The most pleasing thing to Hashem is to be able to listen to Him. And this is the whole fundamental idea that we know in 9 of Nasa the Nishma. You know what Nasa means? Nasa is, we have the Havana. Nishma means rather, Havana, even when we understand or don't understand, we have the Nasa first. We have the ability to listen to Kodesh Baruch Hu, and particularly with Korbanos, because Korbanos is the way to come close to Hashem. So the only way to come close to Hashem, Korban Karov, is to listen to Him. And it would be counterproductive to think that I could outsmart Hashem, and what would be the best way to serve Him. And this is similar to Lama Tokim B'Rosh Hashanah. Why do we blow the shofar Rosh Hashanah? So the answer the Gemara gives in Rosh Hashanah is, Rachman Amar Tiku. Hashem said blow. You can have this reason, wake up, and Mashiach, and all these wonderful reasons. But why do we blow shofar? Bottom line, Hashem told us to. V'zeh ha'leka shalinu l'mod gam b'yamim elu. This is a lesson to learn. Omnam ein lanu efsharu l'kayem mitzvah korbanot. We don't have Rav Reis summarizes this essay. We don't have the ability to do korbanos today. Ulam mitzvot ha-tzaitanut shrira v'kayemet b'chol yom b'chol leinu v'chol sha'a. But our ability to listen to what Hashem wants from us and to do it according to His way, that we still have today. And that's the example Tav Adas gives. He says, Sometimes you have people who will daven whenever they feel like it, at whatever time they feel like it, and they'll do things in davening which will make it feel very arayed, very sweet to them, and they feel like, oh, if I only had this, if, you know, I was wearing this, or I was doing this, ah, then I can feel the spiritual connection to Hashem. That very well may be the case. But if Hashem doesn't allow this, and He wants us to daven at certain times, and in a certain way, in a certain uniform, then for us to break it because, ah, it's so pleasing to us, it's similar to that dvash on the Mizbeach, which we may think is the most incredible smell, but Hashem doesn't want it. And the greatest asset that we can bring to Hashem, the greatest service we can do, is to listen to Hashem. So my friends, I think the first very fundamental lesson that we learn from why don't we put Seor and Dvash on the Mizbeach, what is the reason behind it? The answer is it's a chok. I don't understand why. It may not make sense to me. It may be like, what's going on here? Irrelevant. There has to be some type of hachna, some type of humility that we have the ability to listen to Hashem on His terms, even if we think that on our terms, our service to Hashem would be sweeter and nicer, but even if this is true, if from our mindset, understand that the sweetest and nicest way to serve Hashem is to do what He's told us to do. Okay, so having said that this is a chok, that this is a law we don't understand, having said the Sefer Chinuch that I can't even find a remez, a hint to this, even though we'll get back to Sefer Chinuch and Yirtzeh Hashem soon. And bottom line is, this is what Hashem says, and I don't understand why, and I have to follow it. Having said all of that, we still, and the Mefarshim still, try to find what remezim, what hints can we find that obviously are the reason. They aren't, wow, I've understood it now. Clearly, we don't understand it. But what are certain things that we can, perhaps, remuzzing, hints at, that can come to teach us lessons? And that's what we have to learn. We don't have the korbanos today. We don't have the leavening and the honey today. But we do have are the lessons for our lives. And these lessons are very, very real. And that's what I'd like to try to explore together a little bit in the time that we have. So we'll begin with perhaps the most abstract but practical of the Tiva Torah, who notes a number, and this from this is where we get our title, Sweet and Sour. Says the Tiva Torah of Gamliel that the Seor represents something that's mar umachmits, right? The Seor is something that's bitter, right? It's not sweet. And this is represents one's attitude toward Avodas Hashem, like, ugh, I can never do everything right. I have to just work on myself. It's a propeller for people to move forward. Oh, this isn't right. I have to do this better and that better. Dvash is the exact opposite. It's simcha. It's sweet. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. I'm doing great. I don't have to move any further. My Avodas Hashem is the best where it's at. Both of these are not allowed on our service of God, on our altar. Both of them are to the extreme. And you have to have a balance. This is hinted at in the Pasuk, Im Teitiv Se'et, 14, Vim Lo Teitiv, L'Petach HaTat Roveitz. Im Teitiv, if a person thinks of himself that he is the best, then Se'et, he can come to Gaiva, he can come to haughtiness. Vim Lo Teitiv, and if you don't work on yourself, L'Petach HaTat Roveitz, then you're going to fall into the hands of sin. So the best is Navanat, to have the ability to be balanced in life. And this is what's so important, that you need to have, you can't have one or the other. You can't have the attitude of, oh, I'm never getting anywhere in life. I'm just, you know, I just have to keep on pushing and keep on working and never feel satisfied. And the other side of, I'm doing great. I'm apathetic and complacent. It's no good. There are times you have to feel good about your accomplishments. There have to be times where you have to say, you know, I could have done that chesed better. I could have wrapped it up a little bit nicer. I could have written a nice note with it. You know, I handed her the meal, but I should have written a note with the meal. Or I should have added, you know, a certain dimension to the salad. Whatever it is. So there is a place for saying, let me improve. And there's a place to say, you know what, I think I did a great job. But you have to know the right time and place to have just the leavening and just the honey as two extremes. The sweet and sour do not work on the Mizbeach. Again, balance. But I think that most of the Svarim speak about the idea of Seor as what is found in the Gemara in Brachos, and this is in 16. Ribon ha'olamim galui v'yadua lefanecha shirutzoneinu laso ritzoncha. Gemara in Brachos says, and we turn to Hashem and say, you know, Hashem, I really want to do your will. I really want to be an Eved Hashem. Umi ma'akev, who's holding me back? Seor sheba'isa v'shibud ma'achios. Hashem, there are just two things holding me back. That's not bad, just two things. One is the Seor Shabaisa. One is the leavening in the yeast in the bread. And the other is Shibud Malchios. It's the fact that the nations are over me, and I don't really have free time, and I'm always worried about being persecuted and chased after. I can't serve you, Hashem. All right, let's not deal with Shibud Malchios now. Let's deal with Seor Shabaisa. Well, what is this Seor Shabaisa? Right, none of us are afraid of, the yeast man that's going to come and, the gingerbread man that's going to, gobble us up. Like, what's the imagery here? So we take a look at Source 15. Rabbeinu Bechaya offers his own explanation for the ban on Seor and Tvash. He says that korbanos were instituted to enable a person to atone for transgression. If not for the Yetzer Hara, a person wouldn't sin and wouldn't need to bring a korban. Rabbeinu Bechaya supports his linkage of the Seor to the Yetzer Hara, and that's how we understand what is the Seor Shabaisa, and that's why it's not just two things, it's whoa. That is the Yetzer Hara. And this is the Mechilta, one must remove the Yetzer Hara from his heart. As the verse says, Lo tochal alav chametz, do not eat leavened bread with it. The Katekemach, Rabbeinu Bechaya, elaborates further, noting that there are two prohibitions against chametz. One is Bal Yirah, and one is Bal Yematzeh. Bal Yirah, you can't see it, is parallel to removing the Yetzer Hara from our actions. And Bal Yematzeh, can't be found, is parallel to removing it from our thoughts. Rav Neventhal wants to try to understand, what is this idea of Seor Shabaisa, the agent, the leavening agent in the dough? What does it have to do with the Yetzer Hara? What is the connection between the two? I understand that the Yetzer Hara, it stops us. Granted. But why is the Yetzer Hara called the leavening agent in our dough? And I want to take a look at a number of imageries to understand this. And I think particularly as women, particularly if you bake challah, then understand the power of what the leavening agent does. And many of us have been in a situation where our yeast is not good yeast, or was the hot water was too hot, and the dough doesn't rise, and. So we can appreciate, like, hands-on, what the dough is about. You know, this has nothing to do with anything, but it just comes to my mind, the association of women making challah. I remember a few years ago, I was online at a simcha, and women were taking off their rings to wash, and a woman in front of me said, I don't take off my rings to wash, so I'm just nodding. And she says, you know, I asked a shaila, and the rabbi said, ask me, do you take off your rings when you knead the dough? And I said, no. He says, well, if you don't take them off to knead the dough, you can wash with your rings on your hand. Again, whatever story I tell, it's not for paskening halachically, that's clear. So since I don't take them off for kneading, I keep them on, so I don't have to take them off when I wash now. And then she turns to me and says, but I didn't tell the Rav is that I never kneaded dough in my life, and I never planned on kneading dough. So, okay, you understand that that was a very limited shaila by asking it that way. But okay, be that as it may, Rabbi Neventhal explains the association. When you add yeast to the other ingredients in a dough recipe, the dough begins to rise to fill the entire bowl, eventually overflowing. This is not magic. There's a chemical reaction that causes carbon dioxide to be released into the dough, and the bubbles, like the little gas bubbles in a carbonated beverage, make the dough grow into a much bigger mass. If you stick your finger into the dough, however, the bubbles burst, and the dough falls flat again. The Yetzer Hara is like the Seor, says Rabbi Neventhal, because it's full of fluff. When we are facing a strong Yetzer Hara, whether for money, power, or loss, it seems huge and insurmountable. But if we could just puncture that bubble, it would collapse, because in truth, the Yetzer Hara is no more than an illusion, more attractive in the abstract than in reality. It makes us anticipate some sort of excitement. But when we follow our urge to indulge, we invariably find that it wasn't quite what we expected. In physical matters, expectation and anticipation always exceed reality. The commandment not to add Seor to a Mincha teaches us that if we could just succeed in deflating the Yitzhahara before it overpowers us, by identifying it as no more than fluff, then we would not need to bring the Menachos for iniquity. So when we have this imagery here, my friend, of why can't you bring the Seor, the answer is, on some level, the Seor represents the mindset of... The Seor represents the mindset of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is like this overwhelming fluff. It's an interesting way of describing it. It makes things greater and bigger. If you speak this Lashon Hara, you'll feel so good. If you eat this, you'll feel so good. Builds up our anticipation. Again, that feeling of the yeast, of the carbon dioxide, of just bubbling over. But actually, when we do it, when we say that Lashon Hara, when we eat that food, it wasn't really worth it. Boom. Punctures everything, and everything falls flat. Another way of looking at this dimension, if we don't bring the Seor on the base, on the Korban, because it represents the Yetzirah, so one imagery of representing the Yetzirah is this imagery of the puncturing those bubbles, the fluff. A second imagery, which is a very interesting imagery that the Imre Chemed notes, is something fascinating, Source 18, where he says, and here he'll tie in the honey as well, So, honey, you shouldn't feel like we've left you out, is that he says, Min hagoshel olam, the nature of things, is shekol davar hadomeim, ein bef shiruto lazuz min makamo, elin min kein yosizo toma. A domain, by very nature, means an inanimate object. Something doesn't move, right? It's not like a tzomeach, a flower, or a behemo, or a person, right? It doesn't move on its own. It moves if the wind moves it. It moves if you push it, right? A car, it has wheels, but doesn't move unless you turn it on or you push it, right? There are a number of exceptions, but one classic exception is yeast. Yeast is very fascinating. If you work the dough, then we know it doesn't rise. If you leave it alone, then it begins to move on its own. You hear that imagery? If we move it, the movement stops. It doesn't rise. When does dough rise? When you leave it alone. And that's why when we bake matzah, they keep on saying, move, 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 keep on working the dough, keep on working it, don't leave it around. Because once you start leaving it around, that's when the leavening process begins. And he says this is the Yetzirah. And that's why it's called Sit Worship at Issa. He says many times in 19, Pamim Rabot, there are times, and it happens more often than we'd like to admit, we have direct signs from heaven, whether it's all lane of people getting sick around us, or something amazing happening to us where you really feel Hashem's presence, or someone says something or you hear something and you feel really motivated that you are going to change, that things are going to be different. But what happens? The Yetzirah takes this and says what? Oh, relax, don't get so excited. Yeah, it was that a fascinating was. Yeah, it may be a sign, but you know what? You're doing great, just stay where you are. This idea of non-movement, of just staying with this complacency, is the function of the yeast. If you leave it alone, that's when it takes effect. When you leave yourself alone, the Yetzirah takes effect. If we would work on ourselves and say, wow, I can't believe that happened. Let me say the next bracha with kavana. Let me do something with kavana. When your response is, let me do something, so then you have overcome this Yetzirah. When your response is, okay, that was very nice. So then you are like the Seor Shabbat Yisrael that allowing the yeast to rise. I'll give you an example. I told the story in class last Wednesday of 18-year-olds. I told the story that's been going around in Eretz Yisrael of a 22-year-old boy from Yeshivat Chevron who, I don't know if it was an aneurysm, who had some type of something, where he was swimming and drowned, right? He had some type of an attack and he drowned, 22-year-old boy. So this boy's roommate came over to the Rosh Yeshiva and said, the boy that died had a dream 6 weeks before he died, and he told me not to tell anybody about this dream. Should I listen or not, now that he's no longer here? So Rosh Yeshiva said, tell me about the dream, and I'll let you know. When Rosh Yeshiva heard about the dream, he said, you have to tell people. Now, before I share the dream, let me just preface this dream by saying that what was unique about this young boy was that he was very careful with the midah of hasmada, of working hard, which means that he would have this gold watch on his hand, that before he started learning, he'd put the gold watch down, right, like, you know, aside, and he would just focus on learning, because he didn't want to be bound by time. So like the other boys might look at the time, oh, 10 more minutes and Seder's over, and then we have lunch or dinner. He didn't want that. You know, he would feel like the boys are starting to leave, and he would just go on another 10 minutes. Maybe I'll come late for lunch. I'll come late for dinner. You know, Shabbos afternoon, he'd come right after lunch, take off his watch, and only when they'd clock mincha, then he would get up. He was somebody who tried to push himself as much as possible in learning. What was his dream? The dream went along the lines of he had died, and it wasn't that he had died young. He didn't see himself in his dream as dying young, but that he had left this world. And that a malach came and took him into this gorgeous room. And in this room, filled in this room, were watches, gold watches. And he recognized these watches as his watch. And he saw that they had different times on it and different dates on it. And he realized that each watch was one of the times that he had put his watch down to learn. And then the malach takes him up to a beis medrash above. And he says, this isn't where you're going to be. You're going to be in a much higher beis medrash. Your portion is in a much more exalted place. And he takes his soul into a very high domain where there was no clocks, no eating, no drinking. He says, this is where your soul can really be able to flourish, where you can sit and learn all day. And that's when he woke up. So I told the story to my girls, and I was talking about these 18-year-olds. I was talking about how there's an accountability for what we do, and you just shouldn't think, you know, I take off my watch, what's the big deal? No, every little action we do has an effect on us. 30 kids in the class, all walk out of the class. One girl comes over to me, white, shaking. She says to me, okay, Mr. Smiles, what should I do? How should I live my life? Like, oh my gosh, like, help me out. Like, there's an accountability. There's a responsibility. Like, whoa! And that, I'm sure the other girls were affected on whatever level, but this girl was somebody who overcame that worship of Isla. She didn't walk out complacent. Oh, that's a nice story. Let's hear another story. She took that story to heart and said, I have to own up to my life and who I am. That is somebody who is working on that dough and not just allowing it to take over itself. And the same thing with Dvash in 20. Teva ha-dvashu shekol ma shenofel l'tochol nivla bo v'ne'alam. We've spoken about this in the past by Rosh Hashanah, that whatever falls into honey gets absorbed into the honey and takes on the role of the honey. And that's the same thing with the Itzahara, where the Itzahara just wants you to become so absorbed in life that you don't even hear the baskol crawling out every day, change. Dimta Torah 21, et tasaor la dvash vasrat shneim lumis beach mitam hamavuar paset. Both the saor as well as the dvash are miramzim el yitzahara tadam lishair b'shanuto. They represent the yitzahara that says, be happy with where you're at. V'hu hu amafriya tadam litalov lishtaper b'derech hayashar. And that attitude of complacency, that attitude of apathy is what stops us from growing. When you have Saor, that leavening agent, just leave things alone. Yeah, Dvash, everything will be part of the honey. Everything will be sweet. Everything will be good. You don't have to work on yourself. That can't possibly be put on the Mizbeach, because that is antithetical to what Torah in Yiddishkeit is all about, which is service of Hashem, which is constant movement, which is constant growth, which is what we need to work on at all times. Now, having described that we don't understand this mitzvah, having understood that on some level it may be counter to the word of Zara, on some level it is the ability of not being serving God with the extremes, and others far bring that down, that the Seor were bitter, the the sweet, sweet and sour are the extremes. You can't serve God with a kitsoni. It has to be the middle path. And we've also seen that the sa'or represents the Yetzirah, and that the Tavash also represents this aspect of the Yetzirah of this complacency, just leave things well enough alone, and that is where the Yetzirah gets the strong grip on us. Similar, but a slightly different, and this is where I really want to focus for today, is the insight of the Sefer Chinuch himself, 23. Marosh Shurim brings down, V'omer inyano ha-korbanot kulam lorer machshevet ha-makriv. The whole idea of the korbanos is to awaken our mindset, where you're able to think about what you're doing. V'alkein barachi kachameit shunaseh b'shiya gdola mikorbano yikach dimayon liknot midat hazrizot v'akalut v'mehirut b'maseh Hashem yitbarach Hashem baruch hu. The idea of the sa'or is the ideas we've spoken about of laziness, leave things alone. By not having chameit is about, obviously on one hand it's about gaiva, right, hoardiness, that you shouldn't have that, granted. But it's more so about zrizos. It's more so about being able to have alacrity. Don't allow the yeast to just sit there. Work on yourself. Do something with your life. Zrizos. And what is the dvash about, he says? He says the dvash is about lirdof achar ha-machalim ha-metukim l'chiko. It's about people who indulge in the pleasures of this world. And that you eat because it's tasty, it's nice, but you're not eating for what's healthy for you, what's good for you. When we're talking here, and this is summarized in 25, the prohibition says the Article of Stone Clothes, according to Chinuch, against the offering of leaven and fruit honey conveys a moral lesson regarding the full range of a man's service of Hashem. Man should not be sluggish, as symbolized by the slow process of leavening, nor should he be obsessed with the pursuit of pleasures, as symbolized by the sweetness of honey. Now, if we start with the idea of the sluggishness, this is an idea that's brought down in Sifti Chaim Midos of Adat Hashem, Rav Chaim Friedlander, on the Inyan of Zrizos. And he says, it's not just in the world of action, it's in the world of thought too. If we are not thinking along Torah lines, and we're not working along, obviously thinking about how it can be better, what should I do now, how would I spend my time, he says what's going to creep up is leavening. If I don't work quickly on doing a mitzvah, so then the sluggishness comes in, and it's an attitude, it's a mindset that affects one's actions. And he says, you know what's so bad about this idea of sluggishness? He says, Hakoshi, in the second paragraph in 24, Sheba Akarat Hachreach, L'takeinu midat ha'tzlut, it's because it's so hard to really recognize what's bad about laziness. Why? Because with other bad midos, getting angry, being jealous, hating people, when I feel these things, I know it's bad, right? I'm jealous of this person. I know that I have jealousy in me and I have to get rid of it. When I blow up and I get angry, I know I've gotten angry. It's like you feel you've done something wrong. But I sit back and say, oh, I really don't have the patience or time. Oh, I'll get to it when I get to it. I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. In fact, I might think, you know, I'm preserving self. I'm taking care of myself. I'm doing things in a balanced way. And therefore, I don't think in this sheval tase, in this, you know, sit back position, that there's anything wrong in what I'm doing. And that's a very dangerous mindset. And this is what we have to understand. Talich hitavut ha-chameit v'yitzaro, the fact that we're not allowed to have chameit on Pesach is the mindset. Ala totza'ot ha-ra'ot shela atzlos, what happens when you become lazy. Laziness is something that affects all of your avodas Hashem. And that is why in the base of Mikdash in the Arrow 26, which was a place that we know that Kohanim's reasoning, the Kohanim were... The quality was their alacrity. There is no room in the Beis HaMikdash for this lackadaisical attitude. Oh, when I get to lighting the menorah, I'll be sure I'll be able to do it, or I'll do the korban when I feel like it. No. It was constant movement. It was constant avoda, which has to be the hallmark of our lives. If I'm not working on this, I have to work on that. That doesn't mean I'm working very fast or in a sloppy level, but it means that I'm busy. And busyness allows me to always be moving and developing and growing. Because when I'm not busy, we know that our brain isn't on empty, right? What do you think about? Nothing. That's bogus. It's not true. No one is not thinking about too many negatives. Like, you can never not be thinking about something. There you go. You're always thinking about something. You may not know what you're thinking about, but if you're not going to be proactive and realize what you're thinking about, then you know what? What you could be thinking about may be things that are going to be leading you in the negative direction. Okay, so I understand that the idea of the Seor represents the Yetzirah. We've spoken about that. And in particular, it's the Yetzirah for Atzilus, for being lazy. It's, you know, just leave things alone, which, according to the Rechemet, has its own negativity, wherein you're not going to work on yourself. But on the most simplest level, it means that I'm not going to get done what I need to get done in my Avodas Hashem. But how, then, does that connect with the Dvash, with the indulgence in the pleasures of this world? And the Sifrei Chaim himself, in 31, asks this question, in the bracket. L'chora, he says, ain kesher ben tam yisur ha'seor b'mnachot shu kedei lilamei b'midatas rizot. What is the connection between not eating the leaven, which is about making sure you have alacrity, l'tam yisur ha'dvash shu lamei b'tanugim, which is about not indulging in pleasures? They don't seem to be connected. But he says, if you look at the 9th chapter of Tzil Shishorim, we'll see that the same things are connected. And both of them are about not falling into the trap of laziness. Let's take a look at Rav Yaakov Hillel sending the latter his understanding of Maseilas Yesharim. The bold print is the language of Maseilas Yesharim, and the regular is what he has. Laziness and zeal, 33, are diametrically opposed. The very worst type of indolence is the wish for comfort, ease, and pleasure. Armed with this, partially, the idea of any sort of hard work becomes an anathema. We want our pleasure to be absolute, perfect, and unmarred. This is an approach which is bound to cause trouble, for this type of person will certainly find the service of his Creator exceedingly heavy. Mitzvot involve effort. And he quotes here from Maseilas Yesharim, for one who wishes to eat all his meals with complete relaxation and repose, and to sleep and sleep without disturbance, and refuse to walk if not slowly and the like, behold, it will be difficult for him to get up early for the synagogue in the morning, or to cut short his meal because of the afternoon service at twilight, or to go out for a mitzvah if the time is not suitable for him. Certainly, he will not hurry himself for matters related to mitzvahs or Torah studies. So we see here how when one indulges in the physical world, it does impact on this atzlos. And Rav Hillel notes, life as a Jew makes certain demands. We have to be able to realize that when there's an exertion for a mitzvah, you have to be able to do it and not say, oh, it's time for my afternoon tea. I can't bother myself with this mitzvah right now. And he says, Maseilas Yesharim, and one who accustoms himself to these practices is not his own master, to be able to do the opposite when he so wishes. For his will is already trapped in the prism of habit, which becomes second nature. Once we fall into these behavior patterns, we will not be their master, we will be their slave. Even if we should wish to act differently on occasion, we will be unable to, because we are handcuffed by these ingrained habits, which have become an inseparable part of our existence. And this is why, my friends, we have to understand that any individual has to know that there's a cost to be paid for the material world. The spiritual and material have an interesting interdependent relationship. When one ascends, the other descends. The more we involved we are in the spiritual, and the higher a spiritual level, the less we have for the material. Unfortunately, it works the other way as well. The more importance we attach to the material, the less capacity, interest, and appreciation we have for the spiritual. You know, it's very interesting. The Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe Yosef Scheiderman, quotes from the Ikros Moshe, from Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Shas and Tshuvos in Yordea. And he says, one of the greatest mizikim, one of the greatest things that harms us in our world, is Bikush Taivos Olam Hazeh. Keep in mind, Rav Moshe died in 1987, right, around there, in 687, was living really in our age, but even like, you know, 30 years ago, it's like nothing compared to today. But he said, in our Medina, speaking about America, Mirov HaBracha Shenatan Hashem Yiparach, because of all the abundance of blessing that Hashem has given us, Yesh Ratzon V'Tava Gdola, there's a deep desire to be able to enjoy all the pleasures of this world. Shekarim Lazen, this is a great Hebrew expression, good time, right? Gimel Vav Dalet, Tet Yud Yud Mem, good time, we know is an English word of, just have the good time. That good time is, again, that connection of the Seor and Dvash together. Have the leavening, have the atzmos, just let things go. Enjoy, indulge, do whatever you want. And he says, we have to be very careful. Yes, we have a Shefa Bracha, and Hashem has given us a lot of bounty. And there are times to enjoy this bounty. We have Shabbos, we have Yantif, we have Suda, Shal Mitzvah, 100%. But when Hashem has given us all this bracha, the arrow in 37, Lo yavo mizeh ladun shirasona Hashem yikrashi shtadel lasi kol an och yuchal adei bracha shenatan lo. But don't think that if you have a lot of money and you have ability to, you know, enjoy, that doesn't mean you have to overindulge in every single pleasure in this world. That's not why God has given you all this money. But recognize that the greatest pleasure you will find is the pleasure in spirituality, and nothing is going to match that. And he also quotes, when Nasifa once, the Ramosha Feinstein at a convention, at a gathering, once said, he says, what's happened to us in America? He says, today, 38, you walk into a supermarket, and we can really relate to this. We check if something is kosher. Ooh, this looks like a new item. I haven't seen this before. Ah, it has a hash on it. Let me put it in my cart. Do we ask ourselves, do we need this? Do we want this? Do we, you know, like, no, if it's kosher, gee, that sounds great. Wow, can you imagine that this product is kosher? Let's take it. And he says, Avolo mivinim in 39, shalom hazel, lo pachot treif, midavar shu b'li hechsher. Even if it has a hechsher, it could be treif. Do you really need this? Like, why are you buying this? Like, for what purpose? Obviously, you know, if you want to buy your kids a Rosh Chodesh treat and you think this would be a nice Rosh Chodesh treat or a nice Shabbos treat, that's one thing. But again, within realms, within norms. But just to say, let me just try this out. This like seems like a new and different. And he says, and this is so unbelievable, 39, he says, we used to find the tam, the taste, in a Rashba, in a your Tosfos, in a Rashi, in a Gemara, and really appreciate it. He says, today, you know where people find taste? In potato chips. Yeah, this is what he said. You walk down the aisle, and you have onion-dipped potato chips, and Mexican potato chips, and or he doesn't give those examples, I grant you. But you have every type of potato chip you can imagine. Ketchup potato chips. Where have we put our taste? Where have we put our focus? Where have we put our interest? And this is what we need to understand. There's nothing wrong with dvash. We have, you know, we dip the tapuch in the dvash on Rosh Hashanah. We want a sweet year. There's nothing wrong with dvash. But don't you dare put that dvash on the mizbeach, because you're going to live a life of devoting your entirety of your being to run after pleasures. That is not avodas Hashem. That's not what it's all about. You know, he brings the source 40, the Ol Moshe, that the Saba Mikhail once was with his son, and they were looking outside before shul started, watching the kids playing in the chatzer, in the courtyard. And the Saba of Kelm said to his son, he says, you see these kids playing? The whole world is playing. The difference is, these kids are playing with small toys, and the other people in the world are playing with big toys. We know that, you know? People who just buy one gizmo after another. They're just little, big men and little children buying toys. That's what they're doing. But the difference, he says, is the children know that they're children. But these adults don't realize how they're spending their lives after these games and after these toys. And this is the question that we need to ask ourselves. And going back to Rav Yaakov Hillel, he says, black, white, and gray. It's nothing so clear-cut. There is a positive side as well. The more we succeed in loosening our bonds and bondage to material, the more capable we become of spiritual growth. We're increasingly more available for and interested in learning Torah, doing mitzvot, and growing closer to Hashem. However, our lives in this world consist as well of very large gray areas, with distinctions that are not all that clear, and where we do or not to do, where we indulge or or in or avoid is a question of individual approach. We can choose to take maximum advantage of what pleasures the Torah permits and occupy ourselves with heightening, enhancing our enjoyment of these treats. On the other hand, we can also choose to limit ourselves to reasonable basic human needs and comforts, focusing instead on heightening and enhancing our spirituality. The question here is not one of forbidden or permitted, but rather of emphasis. And we know the sages tell us three things are marchiving daitel shaladam. They expand a person's mind: a nice home, a nice wife, and attractive utensils. But the word marchiving could also be understood as machrivin, which means to destroy. Indulgence in worldly pleasures can ruin us if we do not maintain a proper sense of balance. How will we relate to Hashem's bounty? Will we permit our possessions to drag us down, or will we use them as stepping stones to heaven? If we allow them to lower us to new depths of physical repose, hatred, exertion, and love of pleasure, we will never even climb the first step. And man must know, says Masil Shasharim, that he is not in this world for repose, but rather for toil and exertion. If Rav Hillel adds, phrased more bluntly, this world is not a holiday resort. We are here not to enjoy a lifelong vacation, but to work and work hard. This exertion is an inescapable fact of our lives on earth. The element of available variety lies in our specific fields of exertion. If we are fortunate, our efforts will be channeled into spiritual pursuits. If we are less fortunate, we'll have to work hard, but our labor will have no real long-lasting meaning. I'd just like to add here, let's summarize what I might add, and we'll end with one final idea. What is the Sor and the Drash about? We don't know. Period. It's a chok. We don't understand. Good. We do understand that perhaps it's to move us away from our Sor. We do understand that this is what God said. Finish. This is what we do. On a more of a spiritual level of symbolism, you can't be too depressed that, oh, I'm a nobody, let me work harder on myself. You can't be too happy with yourself. Balance is very important. We know the Sor represents the Yetzer Hara. One, it's like this big bubble, you just have to punch it down. Or two, the Sor represents this feeling of just let things slide, just, you know, let things go, it'll take its own course. No, we have to work on it, and like the Dvash, everything gets subsumed in it. No, we have to take an active effort to make our lives meaningful, like that girl after the watch story, now what? Right? Hello, you know, time is of the essence. The next idea we also saw is that the Seor and the Dvash represent the Sefer Chinuch, Atzlus, laziness versus Zrizus, alacrity, and the Dvash represents the pleasures in this world. They're not two separate things. Our indulgence of this world feeds into this lackadaisical attitude where we feel, and materialism just draws us down. Let me enjoy, let me have my tea, I don't have time now, it's just not a good time, and it prevents us from our avodas Hashem. And yes, there is an idea of enjoying this world, and there's time and place to enjoy, but not to over-enjoy, over-indulge. And that balance is a very hard area to understand. The difference between expanding and destroying, it's a very fine line, but we have to at least be aware of it. The idea I just want to add before the final idea is, I think, as Purim is rounding the corner right now, I think this is essential. When we take a look at Mishlochei Mano, this is smiles, take it or leave it. We look at Mishlochei Mano, we know that we're supposed to be Marbe Mishloch Manos to create friendship and unity, where we're supposed to give more money to Tanos Lavyoni. But we know that Mishloch Mano, and this is the Nakuda I want to speak about, is in order to enhance your Suda. It's not to enhance junk and physical indulgence. So if it's supposed to enhance your Suda, then all this chocolate is out, because a Suda has to be a Fleshich meal, per se. So there goes all the chocolate. Now, you go down the aisles, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, they are selling every type of candy and every type of chip and every type of who knows what imaginable. And then, like, you look at your house after Purim is over, and, like, we have piles of junk. I mean, I shouldn't call it junk, it's food. But, like, food, like, is this what I want to give my kids to eat? No. Like, why are people spending money on this? I understand there's an idea of sweetness. I want to share sweetness. But you know what, my friends? A humatashim sweet, an apple is sweet. When we come back to simplicity and we have our focus again, you can have a theme of simplicity, my friend. That's an interesting theme. You know, back to the apple, the humatashims, and the little bottle of wine. That's simplicity, but that enhances a person's sudha. And this is what we have to focus in on. Where are our priorities? To spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars or shekels investing in these outlandish mishulchei manot that people just are, you know, reshuffling to others? Or to spend their money in spiritual pursuits, allowing people to have a chicken meal who may not be able to afford it? And to be able to come back to the simplicity of what is healthy, what is good. Don't bring dvash in your mishulchei manot, i.e., don't bring in things that are just indulgence for indulgence sake. Bring in things of meaning. And even if you want to give, let's say, a Rebbe or a teacher, I know personally, when I give my daughter's teachers, I give a nice box of chocolate, you're right. Again, I feel it's a dessert to enhance a sudo or baked goods from, again, not from mine, because I know the teachers won't accept my extra, the nice bottle of wine, and then I give them a children's book that their kids will enjoy, something of meaning, something of that, you know, use your sense. They don't need. We all don't need. Our final idea. And this, I think, is a great idea. Let's leave with this. And this will bring in the salt that we began with. Yeast and honey were not permitted in the offerings on the altar. Yeast makes the dough rise higher, but it's also an external additive. Honey makes things taste sweet, but it's also an external additive. Salt, on the other hand, brings out the flavor of the food, but only the flavor that's already there. It's an enhancer. This, says Rav Mordechai Gifter, symbolizes the basic principle of spiritual matters. When serving the Almighty, you should follow the model of salt. That is, utilize all the abilities and talents that you have to serve Him. Do not be like yeast that causes distortion of what is there. Do not be like honey that is very sweet, but it's something borrowed from the outside. Be yourself, but make every effort to be all that you can be. This thought can be repeated frequently, since it is the custom to dip bread into salt at the beginning of a meal. This is a reminder of the sacrifices. It can also serve as a reminder to be ourselves, but to utilize our potential to its fullest. And that, my friends, I think is the essential message. It's not about the haughtiness, it's not about the laziness, it's not about the indulgence. It's about enhancing who we are. Don't lose focus, don't get lost. Be able to have that clarity, the soul, to enhance who and what we are. And then our Avodas Hashem will be pleasing, as in Yishei Reach Nichoach LaHashem, will be a sacrifice that's pleasing to Hashem, as we go about our lives trying to be aligned as much as possible to what is the correct middle ground, without overindulging, without being super lazy and super passive and apathetic in our Avodas Hashem. And when we are on the alert and we bring out the best that we can, in the service of Hashem, that is the most pleasing for Him.